Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Matt Mattson is a professional speaker and entrepreneur, but most importantly, Matt is a dad. He's passionate about coaching his kids' sports teams and is a firm believer in being present. Matt doesn't claim to have all the answers, but he has a few ideas that might inspire us to be better parents. And without further ado, here's Matt.
Can you tell me about your family? Who is your family?
Yeah, I could tell you about my family. Let's start youngest to oldest who live in my house. Let's go that way. We got a new puppy, so and that's the youngest. I wouldn't have normally said that, but since I'm starting youngest to oldest, his name is Bernie, and we had a dog for a long time, and I didn't want another dog. I'll be honest, I got some issues with dogs, and then I finally gave in because my youngest daughter, who is next in line, Josie, she's 11. She is a dog nut, like a puppy freak. Like everything in her life is puppy focused, and she wore me down, and so we ended up getting Bernie this summer, and our whole life has been upended in some pretty cool ways. But then my oldest daughter, so I got two daughters, 11, and my oldest daughter turns 14 here in a week or so, or a couple weeks, I guess. Her name is Elliot, and so I got two middle schoolers, two middle school girls in the house. I'm just overjoyed with both of them. They let me into their life in really cool ways and just love them so much. And my wife, we've been married quite a few years. I'm not going to do the math.
A whole lot. Don't get in trouble. Just don't say it.
I don't know. Like, I do think next year, is that right? Next year is like our, nah, it's not right. Maybe anyway, it was somewhere around 20 years we've been together. I don't know. She forgives me for this now because I never remember, but we've been together for a long time, and we've really just got a wonderful family, and I'm so grateful for it. And I've got other close sort of my nuclear family that grew up. My sister and her family lives about a mile and a half, or a few miles, I guess, maybe from our house. And my mom and dad still live in Michigan, but they come out for half the year and live in their fifth wheel out at the state park. And they're like campground hosts, and they're like living their best life as retirees, but they're nearby. They're, you know, 5-6 miles from our house too. So
that's very Michigan of them to live in a fifth wheel.
It is
Colorado.
Yes, that's right, Sheila. You're
they're living the stereotype.
Yeah, that's where I come from. That's my kind of people. That's where we.
Well, that's awesome. One reason I really wanted to interview you as a dad is because I know you work from home, so you do a lot of stuff with your kids. Like you're picking up and dropping off and doing a lot of that stuff, and you fit your career in between.
Yeah,
a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, and I've been really privileged, and my wife and Megan and I have both been really privileged. We know that we feel so lucky. But I mean, when they were in elementary school, you know, up until this year, they were both, or one of them was in elementary school. We would literally walk them to school and walk to pick them up from school every single day. Like the two of us would go every single day, and like, what a lucky thing that was. I'm sure the other parents are like, do these two work? Like, do they have a life? You know, and this is, you know, pre COVID when everybody worked. Now everybody works with it, but like I've worked from home forever. I remember when Elliot, our oldest, was sort of just born, right? Sort of that period when Megan went back to work. She was working at a high school at the time, so she went back to work, and it was sort of pre daycare, like, you know, kind of in that window before you could really figure out daycare consistently, and that was just hard to figure out anyway. It's so expensive, but I remember days like working here at home with, you know, Elliot in the baby Bjorn and like walking around in circles around our dining room table, just having phone calls. Like I had my little, you know, cool little Bluetooth ear thing in, looking all businessman like, and And with Elliot, like, you know, hanging off the front of me. And if I kept moving, if I kept walking in a circle, she would stay quiet. And I have these vivid memories of that time because it was so hard and so like, and so wonderful, like to have your human being like attached to you and like to do that and to try to balance everything else. And to, you know, I remember, in fact, I remember when Barack Obama was inaugurated, was like the year right after Elliot was born. And is that right? I don't know. I think that's right. And like, we watched the inauguration and I've got work phone calls. So I got my Bluetooth thing in and I'm in the living room walking in circles with baby Bjorn and I'm whispering in her ear, like, look at the TV, history's happening. And I'm crying. Like I have these vivid memories of that time, but yeah, working from home, that's always been just such a blessing. And it allows us to be with the kids a ton. We've just always been really lucky to be able to do that. That's been such a big deal for me. I'll share one other thing maybe related to that. I've said before, and I got a bunch of things that people might call me as a professional, right? A speaker, an entrepreneur, an author, you could call me. But if I wanted anybody to actually call me something, if I wanted a title in my life, it would be youth sports coach. Man, I love coaching my kids in sports. And honestly, when I was young, I remember being, I don't know, 23, 24 and talking to my best friend and the guy who became my business partner. But we would talk a lot about like, what do we want our lives to look like in the future? What does success look like? And he was that kind of friend. We could really talk about that stuff. And I named a bunch of things. But one thing that I really remember naming was like, I remember talking about how my dad was always my coach. He was always he didn't always know the most about the sport or, and he wasn't like a hard driving coach. Like he wasn't, you know, but a sport, he was there. He was just that my dad was a tool and die maker. He worked like nights half my childhood and like worked overtime all the time, but he would be there at the sports stuff that mattered to me. And especially baseball. He was my coach, like my whole life, all growing up. And I remember saying to my buddy, like, what does success look like when I get older? I just want to coach my kids if they'll let me. And if they want to play sports, that to me was this sort of icon of what it means to be a good dad. And I'm so grateful to do it. I am currently the head coach of two of Josie's teams, but I've coached Elliot many, many times as she's grown up. It's just, but a lot of that has been because about a flexible work schedule.
It has to be. I mean, we looked at that. We're like, oh, well, Justin, why don't you coach this? He's like, I get home at 5. Like, I can't. They start coaching at 3:30. Yeah. And, you know, even as a parent, taking your kid to these sporting events, it's such a time suck of your life. And unless it's something that you're committed to as a family, it's just such a hard thing to make it work. But you, as your family, have made that work. You've set your intention, said, this is how I want my family to live. And if my girls are into sports, not when my girls, but if my girls are into sports, I'm right there with them.
Yeah.
And how do you do that when you travel? Because you travel quite a bit too, don't you?
Yeah. Again, though, like I've been really lucky. I do travel. I travel less now than I did, especially when the kids were younger. When the kids were younger, I traveled a lot. And, for my job. And it was hard. It was hard. It wasn't that hard on me. I stayed in nice hotels and ate good food. It was fine for me, but it was really hard on Megan. And maybe, you know, if there was any, we've got a wonderful relationship and it's been a like firm marriage for forever. But if there was ever one thing that was a real challenge in our marriage, it was balancing the expectations of travel is part of my work. And I know that when I leave, everything falls onto your plate. Now, I think I'm a pretty good helper when I'm here. I think we share duties pretty well. But man, when I leave everything and when the kids are little, that is not easy. And it always seemed like every time I would go on a trip, within 24 hours, Megan would call me and say, one of the kids is sick. Well, a kid just threw up. Like every time I left, a kid would throw up. I don't know what. And I've heard from other parents of young kids who parents who travel a lot, like that's the same that happens. It was such a weird and challenging thing. It was so hard. And I mean, I carry guilt about that. I carry, you know, guilt, especially in my relationship with my wife, but also sort of in my relationship with my kids. And you know, Elliot was always okay with it, my older one, but Josie, when she was younger, she would lay on the guilt. She would look at me as I was tucking her into bed and she would say, "I love you, Daddy. Good night." And, "Daddy, I thought you were the boss of your company. Why do you have to travel? Why are you leaving me again?" Like she would just directly ask the question that I would be forced to answer with.
Well, she is your daughter. So
Yeah.
There's no secret. There's no hiding questions in your life. No. You draw an open book and she knows she's going to, you know, they find the buttons and they press them. This one's going to get him.
Yeah. And that one is, she has pressed that for a lot of years now. And she's good at that. Not in a mean, like, you know, just genuine way. Like, are you making a choice right now, Dad? And never trying to make me feel guilty or anything. Like just naming what's happening and having that mirror in your life, somebody reflecting what's really the choice you are making. And the, man, that was never easy. Still isn't.
That's amazing. God, you have such a unique opportunity that so many dads don't have. How do you see dads around you that do have those full-time jobs? How do you see dads that are kind of entering into that as much as they can? Or what advice do you have for dads that don't have your flexibility?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm in a position to give them advice. What I do see is a bunch of tired dads. I see that a lot. I see a lot of just exhausted dads who are trying their hardest, dads who you know, will drop their kid off at the practice that I'm coaching and I'm energetic clown Matt because I've been, you know, that's a who I am, and I've been home all day, and I've been, you know, I'm in a different place. I haven't been working 8 to 5 with an hour commute each way and, you know, a bunch of stress popping into my inbox, you know, in the evening. That's not where I am in my career right now. And I see those dads and I see those moms, I see those families who drop the kids off and then just sit in their car and look at their phone. This isn't me saying, they should get up. No, it's me saying, oh, of course they are, because they're exhausted and they're trying to keep up and they're trying to find that balance and they're trying to use that moment. And I share with those dads, those parents, the struggle of attention, the struggle of choosing to turn and not just half be there with my kids when they have a question or a conversation, or they're just trying to tell me about the weird thing that happened today. And there's always a weird thing that happened today, but like to really turn and listen to and be in that moment with them. And that is just so hard for me. And I watch dads who work and dads, and you asked about dads. So I keep saying that, but I watch parents who have just spent 12 hours trying to deal with HR issues or trying to deal with whatever drama is happening in their workplace, and everybody's got it and they're bringing it home and they just need to breathe. And they just, could I just unwind for just a second? And their kids tell them about, you know, middle school drama that happened, but they don't really care. Of course they don't care about it, but you've got to be there with that kid. So I think I just empathize with those parents and I see them all the time. I see them all the time in the afternoons and the evenings, and I see the tiredness and I see the stretch. I think that's not just limited to people who have a traditional in-office job or whatever. I see that in the eyes of a lot of parents, and I certainly feel it. I'm lucky to be in a place right now in my life, just at the moment, where I don't feel it quite as intensely as I have in the past. And I think that's a period of, I don't know, I'm getting older as a parent. My kids are getting older. I'm shifting into sort of a new life chapter. They're in a new life chapter, right? Like the book pages of being a parent keep turning, right? And I think when you're in the third grade you know, pulling my hair out and everything's really hard. And like my career is hard and parenting is hard and the kids are hard. And like, and I'm dealing with other pressures from other parts of my family. And those moments are hard. It feels like that page is never going to turn. I don't know that it does for everybody. I know it has for me in a new way. And I'm sure I know it will again. My oldest will be in high school next year. And I am terrified. And I don't mean that lightly. I'm genuinely nervous about that on a daily basis. Anyway, but those chapters turn, the book pages turn, I guess.
I kind of like to look at it as seasons, you know. The seasons change, the trees die, they come back to life, they change, they die, they come back to life. And if you've kind of got to go with the flow. And I mean, I've got young kids right now and they drive me totally batty. And my 6-year-old comes home with stories and it takes her 30 minutes to get through it. And I still don't know what happened. Yeah. I don't know what the story was about. And then my 9-year-old says, "Oh, stop talking." And I'm like, "Just listen to her." And I don't know what you're saying. And then my husband, you know, like leaning in the fetal position on the floor. It's totally normal, I think. Yeah. What do you think families need right now? Because our world is 100 miles an hour. And with social media the way it is, our expectations are far above and beyond what realities can handle. So what are we missing? What are families missing that we need to really connect in our lives?
Yeah. You know, I think I don't know that I'm the wise sage with that answer. The answer that I'll bring to the table, though, is moments. I think that's the answer that I'll give you, Sheila. I think our families need moments, and we need to. I'm speaking to me as much as I'm speaking to anybody else. I need to, as often as possible, realize that there aren't that many moments that I really get. And I can create moments more often if I try. And the moments that I do get, I can try to be there in them. And I can try to really lean into them. And this is about little conversations. This is about little quiet moments. This is about dinner tables. This is, you know, for me, dinner tables are the symbol of what I'm talking about. The amount of days in a given week that I sit in my spot at our dinner table. We eat dinner together. I love that we eat around our table, and it's the most expensive piece of furniture in our house. We spent a lot of money on our fancy dinner table because we wanted it to be the centerpiece of our house. And like that's, and it is. And every night we sit around it. But the amount of nights I sit in my spot at that dinner table and just shovel food in my mouth and sort of avoid real eye contact, smile politely at whatever story the kids are telling, and just try to get through it because I'm frustrated with something, or I've got my head in an email that I'm trying to write before I'm actually trying to write it, or I got a big idea that I really would rather get up from the table and write down, or I'm curious about the score of the game that is going on right now, and I kind of want to check it, and it buzzes on my watch now, so that's nice. I can check it there, and like the amount of those moments that I'm not really in. That's the thing I think that families like ours need to make a choice about, like in all of those moments. And I think here's what I feel. I think it's okay to not make the choice to be 100% present 100% of the time. Gosh, we got to forgive ourselves for that. And so when I say all that, I don't say it with a ton of guilt. I say it with just a simple realization that I get to make a choice. And the more often I choose to really try to set aside all my junk and all the baggage that I brought to dinner and just be there with my kids and be there with my wife, like really be there. When I make that choice, I think that dinner table space can become really special. Like I, Sheila, you know, this is the language I use all the time, but like, I think it can be a sacred space. I think it might be the sacred space in our family's life. That to me is where the things I believe live. That's where God lives, in that space between us, if we choose. And it's not always easy to choose that. It's not. And it's okay if I don't. It's okay if we don't. But man, when we do, that's it right there. That is the stuff that matters in life is right there in the middle of the dinner table. No matter if we're eating frozen pizza or the best meal on our menu, like that is where it is. I really believe that. And I think that's the struggle of the fast-paced, modern, digitized, disconnected, lonely world that we live in. We're not training ourselves to do that. We're untraining ourselves to be.
We can do more and more things at one time.
Yeah. And the more and more things that we do are me and my phone, not me and my people. And man, I use my phone more than most people. I'm good at my phone. I'm good at social media. I'm really good at all that stuff. And it's training me. I got to be aware. It's training me to look away. Like, that's it. It's just training me to look away from the people that I say I love the most. And that is so important to just be aware of, I think.
I totally agree. I grew up in a family that the rule was we eat together, period. If you want to go to a friend's house, if you want to do something, whatever, you're home by 5 or you leave after 6. Like, that's how it goes. And so that's just an automatic for my family. Nobody gets to eat on the couch. Even on special, like maybe you can have lunch on the couch on a Saturday after you've completely cleaned the house, and then you're going to have to re-clean that couch. Okay. But yeah, dinner tables for us is an extremely important place. And it's a place where we try to connect with each other, and it doesn't always go well. Yeah. So, you know, you just do your very best. No phones at the table, no watches at the table. I mean, it's a technology-free zone, TV's off, and it's difficult. It is a difficult, but I even remember in the 90s as a kid, my parents had a hell of a time keeping us at the table, keeping us talking, keeping us like, you know, it's not just our generation where that's difficult. It's easier to say, just eat your food wherever. As long as you eat, I don't care. But having that family together and say, we are together, all 5 of us for 30 minutes every single day at this one spot. And that's what's important.
Have there been for you, are there dinner table moments, either at your dinner table or maybe sacred conversation moments, moments that felt like you did it right?
Yes, but only like once a month.
Yeah. That's important. Once a month. Once a month is once a month.
Either yelling or there's like total silence. But yeah, every once in a while, my son will say something or my daughter will say something and we'll be like, wait, I think this is the time. This is the focus. And we're in and we're in and we're in. And then we're like, okay, that's over. That was 30 seconds. Okay. But you got to catch it. You got to catch those moments.
You got to catch it. And you got to not feel guilty that it's once a month. Sheila, I think that's part of what I see in those tired eyes of the parents that I see in my neighborhood and that bring their kids to soccer practice and softball practice. And part of what I see in their eyes is guilt, is like that they're doing it wrong and that they're really afraid that they're doing it wrong. And maybe they are. I don't know. But man, I want to at least be somebody who says out loud to other people, no, it's hard. Most people go through most of their life having really mediocre surface level interactions with everybody all the time. I really think that. I hear it from people all the time. And they go through most of their family life, their family interactions, having almost all really surface level, really basic, really tinged with emotions that you don't want your interactions to be tinged with, anger or resentment or frustration. Like, that is most people's norm, I think. And I think it's okay to say, for me, that is also a norm. Like, that is, and I think you have the power to choose to try as often as possible to break that norm.
To be intentional. I completely understand that, because sometimes I'll be doing stuff in my house and my husband will say something. I'm like, I don't even know this guy. Like, what is he talking about? We've never discussed that. What is he? And then I'm like, okay, wait, I've been checking out. I know I've been checking out. Or my son will say something, or my daughter will say something. And then you see these families as they, like, a big fear of mine is my kids grow up and they never come home.
Yeah.
That's a huge fear of mine, is did I not connect with them well enough when they were young that they don't care anymore as they get older? Is that something that I can even control? Yeah. And so much of it is no, but so much of it is too, is be intentional about everything that you do. And yeah, you can't necessarily control what your kids do as adults, but you can always be that loving source at the end of the day that says, you know, I'm your safe space. Yeah. Let me be your safe space.
Man, that's to be somebody's safe space. That's pretty simple, right, Sheila? It's a pretty simple phrase, pretty simple concept, but it's also not how a lot of people experienced family growing up. I did. I was really lucky. My mom and dad created a really safe space in our house. I felt like I could talk about anything at any time. And if I messed up, I could tell them, and they, you know, it wasn't punishment. But I think a lot of people don't have that model in their brain. And so even if they want to create a safe space, they don't have they didn't see how it was done. And so they're just guessing along the way. But naming that as an intention, Sheila, I think is a really powerful thing to say. If family is anything, it is at the very least a safe space. If our dinner table is anything, is at the very least a safe space. But nothing can be sacred until it's safe. That's probably true. I don't know. I just made that up, but quote me. Let's put that on a tweet someplace. Nothing can be sacred until it is safe. I think that is very real. And so if you want those deeper connections, if you want a dinner table conversation where everybody's just talking about what's so important and we're all leaning in and looking at each other and our hearts and souls are open to one another and we're lifting each other up. If you want that, it's got to be safe first. And that's just an important thing to say out loud, Sheila. I really like that.
I think a lot of families try to do that. They just don't know how to make it. How to portray that to their kids, like, you know, and I don't know if I'm doing it right either, but we'll just keep on plugging away and see what happens.
So because I teach human connection as a part of what I've done for my career for the last couple decades, let me share. I think there are two words. I could share four, but I'm going to focus on two. But I think if you want to create a safe space, if you want to create a space that even feels sacred or that offers a deeper connection at your dinner table, for example, or in one-on-one conversations with your kids or with your spouse or your partner, I might offer two things that I've kept close to me as sort of core values or core choices I could make in those interactions. The first one is curiosity. And that sounds really simple, but I mean, like, radical curiosity, where I don't presume to know anything and except how to ask great questions. If I approach my interactions with my kids, especially as they've gotten older, but even when they were younger, if I approach my interactions just purely rooted in curiosity first, before anything else, be curious, be really, really uncertain. Know that they are living a whole other life than you are, a whole other life. They're experiencing things in a dramatically different way than I am. And if I'm curious to live in their shoes for a second, to see through their eyes for just a moment, to be really interested in whatever's happening in their hearts and in their real life experiences, man, that to me has been a grounding principle. In the way that I've, especially as my older daughter is, I mean, she's a teenager. She's, you know, she's dealing with some real challenging, heavy stuff in her school and her friend group. And it gets serious real quick. Man, middle school, whew, the conversations dramatically increase in challenge. It's like you level up in a video game, like times 100 all of a sudden. And I know when I show up thinking I know the answers, I'm not very effective as a parent. And when I show up being really curious, it changes the dynamic entirely. And that is a simple choice I can make. The second choice, the second word that keeps me grounded in some of those conversations is vulnerability. And especially as a parent, this can be hard.
That's a bad word. for a lot of people. It's a scary word for a lot of people.
Oh, big time. Yeah. And in fact, considering if they think about how was I parented in a way that demonstrated vulnerability? For a lot of people our age, my age, no, hard no. Like the answer is nope, that was not a model of parenting or adulthood that I even saw.
Right. Vulnerability means weakness. That's what we were taught. That's my generation was taught. Vulnerability is weakness.
Absolutely.
It's the opposite. It's the opposite.
I'm certain it's the opposite, especially in the way that I interact with my kids. What I know is every time I say, well, let me tell you a story about how I messed up as a kid when I was your age. And when I think that would scare a lot of parents. And it scares me, to be really plain. Every time I start that, because, I wasn't trained to be vulnerable. I don't think that our generation was, Gen X. That's the opposite of what we were trained to be, right? But when I go there, when I say, this is how I messed up. And when I go even further and say, I said to my daughter the other day, I'm really scared I'm not parenting you well right now. And it wasn't like a boxed phrase that I was trying to manipulate her. Like I was being real. I said, I think I'm screwing up as a dad. And here's specifically what I think I'm doing wrong. And I think it's because I got this insecurity inside me that I'm trying to mask in the way that I'm trying to be your dad right now. It was like probably too much. I don't know, for a kid to hear. I don't know, but they didn't receive it as too much. She received it as like welcoming and safe. And oh, if my dad can say that to me, then maybe I can say this to him. And there is a level of trust that you got to have with your kid, and that I think if you have it with your kid will have with you. And I think that's what we all really want. But those two things for me, curiosity and vulnerability. If I was to say these are two things that I'm trying really hard to do not always get right at all, but trying really hard to do, and they've made a big difference in the way that we connect as a family. It's those two things.
I totally agree with that as well. I've also had that conversation with my kids, my son mostly, because he's older, and he challenges me in ways that I didn't realize were possible. So yeah, I've definitely said that word. I said, I don't know if I'm doing this right. I don't know if I'm saying the right thing. I don't know if, you know, I don't know this. I don't know that. What do you know? What can you tell me?
Yeah.
You need to pull it together. Sorry, son. This is what you got. Okay. Gee. It gives me a hard time all the time.
You need to pull it together. That's just good advice from a kid sometimes. You know what? All right. Okay. You're right, kid. You're right. Yes.
You're a mess, Mom. You're a mess. You're right. I am. And now you get to see it. Congratulations. We're all humans. Okay. Well, what are you working on in the community? You are, because you're working on some stuff to help families come together. That's why I wanted to talk to you. And I did work with you on some of this stuff to help families come together. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So the newest project that I'm really passionate about right now is something called Between. And here, I'll plug it real quick, Sheila. This is a podcast. So Between is like a digital spiritual community that is really focused on helping people create sacred human connection, sacred moments of human connection in their life. So it's kind of like some online, you know, short 5-minute sermons, as it were. What I really hope is that it's kind of interfaith and welcoming and inclusive of people all over the world who just want better connections in their life and who maybe have felt a moment where a conversation felt like it was sacred, felt like it was holy, felt like God was there in the middle of that conversation with them, and they want to feel that more often. And so that's what this whole project Between is about. People can learn about it at between.church. You just go to your internet machine and type in between.church. But that's a lot of what we were just talking about is what it's about. You know, I wrote someplace, maybe on a social media post, I wrote like, I want our kitchen tables, our dining room tables to be cathedrals of connection. And I really liked that phrase, cathedrals of connection. But that to me, that's kind of what it's about. For me, a lot of my faith formation, a lot of the things that I believe about the big questions of life didn't really come from, I don't know, Sunday school or even going to church. Like that's not where it came from. For me, a lot of my faith formation came from coffee shop conversations with people I admire, late night, real one-on-one conversations with some of my closest friends and with people different from me. And where I just felt like that conversation was sacred and I was willing to talk about the big questions of life there. I think all the way back to freshman year of college, I was talking about this. My roommate was Jonathan. His name was Jonathan Ward. And I remember, you know, in our dorm room late at night, I'd be laying up on the top bunk of our prison cell or dorm room or whatever it was. And he'd be down on the bottom bunk and we'd stay up till like the next morning talking about big stuff, about religion and spirituality, but also about politics and who we wanted to become and the impact we wanted to make on the world. And I will never forget those conversations because they felt sacred. Not just because we were talking about God or whatever. By the way, he believed very different things than me. And that's what made them sacred, was our curiosity about each other and our willingness to just be real with each other. I think people want more of that in their lives. I think there are a lot of people who want more of that in their lives and they don't know how to find it. And so that's that project I really want to work on. You and I have also been working on another project at Grace Presbyterian Church, this Gather project, this idea of creating a sort of a safe, quote unquote, worship space that is interactive and playful and childlike, but isn't just for kids. It's for families, especially for families to be able to feel sacred connection at like in a playful way, in a way that they actually interact with each other, not just sit in their pews and look up front to whoever seems important up front, but instead like the important people in the room or the people sitting next to them and the kids that they came with and the people of other generations that are sitting across the aisle that they end up having an interaction with. And man, I love that project too. So yeah, a lot of things in my life, Sheila, revolve around the idea that the space between us is sacred. And we can choose how we fill that space. That's a lot of my career has been about that sort of accidentally. I'm not even sure how that became my life, but it is very much what I do.
You know, and I see with all of those things that you're doing, that dinner table is the sacred space, whether you're a family or whether you're a college student or whether you're a young professional just trying to find your place in life. You find a sacred table and you have some coffee or some food with somebody and you really just sit there and relax and let yourself go and let your vulnerabilities come out and ask and be curious. And, you know, I totally agree with that. I love speaking with people of different cultures and beliefs than I have. And I love speaking with different parents with different ways of parenting than I do, because we all parent completely differently. Our kid does this, our kid does that. And, you know, we all have the same goal for each other, is to have healthy, okay kids that grow up and are great pieces of our society. And, you know, hopefully they bring us grandkids, you know, so. But I mean, I think no matter how different we are, we all have the same goals in mind, is to have great kids and connect with great people and live a great life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of us, especially when we become parents, it's so cliche to say like everything changes when you become parents. But that to me is like something deeper. When we're saying those cliche things, we're talking about meaning. We're talking about purpose. We're talking about legacy. We're talking about a connection. Suddenly, when I became a parent, suddenly I felt connected to my ancestors in a different way, because suddenly I had the potential to become an ancestor. Like that, I started to see time differently. And everything, just the level of meaning baked into every moment and every decision became 100-fold deeper, it felt to me. And I think we all want that same thing. We all long for those same things. We all long for people around us we care about and who love us and who we love, and we long for purpose. And man, having kids, building a family is kind of both of those deepest human desires happening all at once in the most intimate way. And the way we choose to construct that family, the way we choose to fill that family with conversations and interactions and relationships, how we define that relationships, the choices we make in those little moments, that's everything.
Thanks for listening to my interview with Matt Mattson. You can find more information about Matt's latest project at between.church. If you enjoyed listening to this interview, I suggest you check out his TED Talks titled When We Gather, We Matter and Curiously Uncertain. You can find more links to Matt's work in our show notes and on my website at SheilaKChester.com. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today.